Thank you very much for the introduction, and thank you all for coming for the presentation. Today I'm going to talk about modeling nitrogen loss and mitigation potential when you use enhanced efficiency fertilizers from agricultural soil. My advisors was missing from the page on the schedule, so I'm sorry about that. So here they are, and it is funded by one of the USDA projects. So what is nitrogen? Nitrogen is a key element, component of ammonia acid, proteins, DNA, RNA, and required by most life form to grow. It is also a limiting nutrient for primary production. And at the same time, nitrogen exists in several oxidation states that makes the nitrogen cycle very complex and even hard to model. Even for some experimental, it is hard to measure as well. And all of these forms are of environmental interest. And I forgot to point out that the previous two speakers also talk about modeling nitrogen, modeling the nitrogen cycles in terms of yield. But I'm talking about general loss and other stuff. In a bigger picture, half of the nitrogen applied is lost from the crop production system. But only 14% of the applied nitrogen is consumed by human if it's a totally vegetarian diet, and only 4% if it's a carnivorous diet. So nitrogen loss from a soil system when fertilizer is applied can be in a form of nitrous oxide, which is a potent greenhouse gas effect that has about 310 times the of carbon dioxide. It also depletes ozone layer. NOx and ammonia are another losses from the agricultural soil system, which are air pollutant, may cause toxic gas, causes acid rain, and also considered as indirect greenhouse gas emissions, which basically, when it leaves the source, it just deposited somewhere else and produces N2O gas. Nitrate, on the other hand, leads through the system with water and cause eutrophication of water bodies, as well as health problems like blue baby syndromes. And N2 in the soil system is mostly from by denitrification. So about 6.3% of total greenhouse gas is from N2O, which is the EPA estimates, of which about 75% are from agricultural soil system, and most of them when nitrogen is applied. If you do a simple math, it's about 4.7% of total greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. is solely from soil. So in 2013, me and my primary advisor, we did a meta-analysis about the reduction factor from some of this enhanced efficiency fertilizer, and it is used on the USDA guidelines. So what we found was, if you use slow-release or controlled-release fertilizers, about 20% of the nitrogen is reduced, N2O emissions is reduced overall. But when you use nitrification inhibitor, about 70% are reduced, and it does not distinguish between any forms of nitrification inhibitors. Most of them reduce about 75%. This is the data we use to estimate the emission reduction factor. As you can see, some of the data points shows higher N2O emissions even with the treatment, where the x-axis is the control, which is basically the conventional urea practice on that reason, and y-axis is if you use a slow-release fertilizer. And there's some mixed result. As well as if you look here on the bottom right here, so these are the sites that produces low N2O emissions. And there's like, it's not that much difference between the N2O emissions with control and treatment. It might be because of the sites or the fertilizer treatment. We don't know, because some of this treatment are done in a plot, and then N2O emissions vary side by side, even in a small scale on the plot, within the plot. This is for nitrification inhibitor. Most of the data shows a big reduction and similar story on the low end of the plot. However, one thing I want to point out, this data are from control trials that has the same management practice, except the further the types are different. So this is the sites around the world where we collected the data for slow release. This is for nitrification inhibitor. As you can see, there's more data in nitrification inhibitor, but even though, as you can see that there are only few sites that has the data, and if you want to model the whole globe or a region, it's not sufficient. So it does not do. So what we do is we use a model to predict the global N2 emissions or regional N2 emissions so that we can feedback policymakers. The model I'm using here is a Dacent model. It's a daily time step version of the Century model, which has been developed in Colorado State about 30 years ago. It is heavily used around the world, and it is also used to estimate the U.S. greenhouse gas from agriculture sector. So modeling enhanced efficiency fertilizer. So I'm planning to model the slow-release fertilizer, nitrification inhibitor, and urease inhibitor. The current Dacent does not have the capability to model slow-release fertilizers and urease inhibitor. However, it has a component to model nitrification inhibitor which is not dynamic. Basically means the user have to provide a reduction factor and then the duration of reduction is required. So I'm planning to model it dynamically, so you just model the effect of nitrification inhibitor. Slow-release fertilizers. Slow-release fertilizers are fertilizers that slowly release the fertilizer from a coated or a polymer coated or some sort of controlled mechanism and determined by the pattern of release and duration of release, and that can be controlled during manufacturing process. So I use a sigmoidal curve, which is a Gumpert's equation, and only two parameters are required here. So the lambda, which is a lag term, and T80, which is a time required to release 80% of the nitrogen. And this mu rate can be calculated once you know what lambda and T80 is. However, the temperature, so the previous slide is based on a reference temperature given. However, the temperature varies day by day and other stuff. So how to account for that variability of temperature? So I come up with with this effective time of release, which can be estimated by a Q10, a temperature coefficients, basically means, for example, if the Q10 is 2, for example, and the reference today is the reference temperature, and then exactly hit the reference temperature today, then the effective time of decay will be 1 day. So it will release all nutrient for 1 day today. If the reference temperature is 10 degrees above if today's temperature is about 10 degrees above the reference temperature, then the release will be about twice as much today. And if it's 10 degrees less, then release will be about half. And this is the release curve kind of estimated using one of the Fort Collins site for 2010. And this is the fertilizer date and the shadow. The shaded area shows the planting date and harvest date. So modeling nitrification inhibitors. Basically, nitrification inhibitor inhibits the process of nitrification, which converts ammonium to nitrate. And it is dynamically, I use a dynamic model to estimate the amount of nitrification inhibitor after application, because whatever the whatever nitrification inhibitor is left determine what is the reduction factor on the nitrification, and is more important. So I use a half-life here, and then once you calculate the half-life based on the average temperature, you applied with a varying temperature. So this shows the red line shows reference temperature for Fort Collins using long-term temperature, 30 years long-term temperature from May to September. And the green line and blue line represent using 2011 daily temperature, soil temperature, and 2012 daily soil temperature. Once you have the amount of nitrification remaining over time, you can use that as a reduction factor. So if there's higher amount on the soil, the reduction factor will be higher. If there's less, it will be less. Right now, decent, and then this emission factor will be directly implied to the one of the decent calculation to calculate the nitrification rate. So urease inhibitor. So when you apply urea-based fertilizers, it hydrolyzes. And this is without the inhibitor, and that's with the inhibitor. And that's kind of mathematical representation. And the one is the graphical representation is shown at the bottom. So here, the Vmax is the maximum rate of urea hydrolysis when the concentration of urea increases to goes to infinity. And this Michaelis-Menten kinetics coefficient is half of the concentration of urea when the Vmax get halved. As you can see, once you apply the inhibitor process, that kind of shifts toward the higher concentration, reducing the rate of urea hydrolysis, and most of the urea, more urea will be on the soil compared to conventional urea. So this is a preliminary result. It's not complete yet. I'm just showing some preliminary result from the model. So I use RDAC data from Fort Collins. It's a continuous corn with no-till and strip-till system for 2009 and 2010. And some of the fertilizers are urea and UAN as a conventional fertilizer. And for the enhanced efficiency fertilizer, super urea is a urea-based fertilizer which contains both urease and nitrification inhibitor, and UAN plus Agroten plus that also contains urease and nitrification inhibitor, and ESN, which is a controlled release product. So this is the result for strip trial. The red one are model, the blue are measured data, and then soil temperature, water field pore space, and the bottom one is the rainfall plus irrigation event on Fort Collins in RDAC. This is another result, measured versus model for the rest of it. As you can see, in bulk part, if you look at the daily result, we are hitting some, but we are missing some. And I also look at soil ammonium concentration, the model. And as you can see, urea gives the highest soil ammonium concentration, and ESN gives the lowest soil ammonium concentration. So looking at the total emissions, which is an emission factor, basically, we are doing pretty good job with urea because the model is kind of calibrated to match the urea N2O. However, other measurements are really low, but we are not matching the N2O emissions for the other fertilizers. And this is something I need to work on. Why I don't have some idea. I don't have a lot of idea because I don't know the site very well, because that's not I did not measure the sites. It's somebody else measures the sites and I use the data. This is for no-till. It's a similar story, but no-till has a little lower N2O yield compared to strip-till. But since I don't have a confidence interval, what is the uncertainty, I cannot tell like no-till reduces or increases the yield. So next step. Jason model is a mass balance model and does not account for ammonia volatilization loss. That basically means it has to account somewhere else. So input equals output, all the ammonia volatilization. When the urea is applied, 60% of the loss, up to 60% of the loss is ammonia, and that's not accounted for. So I'm going to work on that one. Since we model heavily depends on the data and other stuff, I'm going to and it requires a parameter estimation. I'm planning to use hierarchical Bayesian techniques to estimate the parameters. In general, ammonia volatilization is measured as a coefficient of ammonium concentration here, say here, and then it's modeled as a function of pH and soil temperature. And then since a lot of the ammonia, when urea-based fertilizer is applied, there's a change in pH will determine most of the ammonia volatilization, and it will be estimated using Gompertz equation. So hierarchical Bayesian model provides flexibility on the model structure, incorporate multiple sources of information, model uncertainty, model comparison, parameter, and it also can be account for a spatial and temporal correlation. Sorry, I ran out of time. So, any questions?